This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
You know what? Brad Pitt, you're a good actor. You're a movie star. You're more of a movie star than a great actor. And that's okay, because you're in really good movies and I enjoy them.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
And as long as that ends up being the case, hey, Bishop, I'm still on the radio.
No, it's all right. He can hang.
Paw Patrol.
I need another Paw Patrol.
Okay, I'm going to come turn it on in just a couple of moments, all right?
Big Ann Herron.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
With Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Anthony Herron is here. Football was here last night, and it was fine. That absolutely served its purpose to, if nothing else, it was like an amuse-bouche. It was just one of those, you know, little appetizer that they bring it over.
That was a very Duke word you used.
It means, you know, fun in the mouth. And yeah. they bring it over.
Tasty little morsel.
Yes, they're like, thank you. This is so nice. What is this? This is the chef's pickled radishes or something like that. It turned out to be some entertaining football. What did you think?
I would have liked a bit more defense, but yes, it was entertaining for what it was. There's no doubt. It was nice that you guys had Colin Johnson on, and it was a big night for him. When you look at the statistics of his career, three seasons in, he's kind of gotten less and less run year over year throughout his brief time in the NFL so far. But last night, I mean, the Colin Johnsons of the world is what last night was about. The Brett Rippins of the world, that's what last night was about. And both guys showed up, showed out. I mean, on the kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, you had Khalil Herbert, who's a proven commodity as a runner in the NFL, and he's done it against great defenses in big moments. We know he's talented with the ball in his hands, so him dominating Houston's backups doesn't mean nearly as much, but it is like, oh, okay, that's the best player on the field right there. Look at him with the football. So at least it's a little proof of concept, I guess, but for Rippin, for Johnson, there's guys out there who were doing things that, especially for Johnson, now this will become an additional look from the Bears coaches. Not that he's going to break into the lineup unless a bunch of guys get hurt. He's not going to be a pass catcher for the Bears this season, but they at least now look at him and say, what can we do with him? Well, you know, all right, so we've seen the frame and we've seen him on the practice field. He's had some moments. Now this is in game action against opponents. Oh, maybe there's a role for him. Can he be some, you know, in this newly sort of revamped kickoff return unit? Can he be a guy out there? Can he be someone who's able to cover kickoffs? Can he be someone who can be on the punt team in some capacity? Let's look for a role because he's out here making plays.
I think the answer to that's yes. Why not? Yes.
I mean, we'll see. He'll get the opportunity. Richard Hightower will give him the opportunity, and he'll have to prove it. At 6'6", 225 or whatever, you know, he probably not going to be a gunner on your punt coverage team, but can he be a protector, like your end or wing kind of position, and then go down there and tackle somebody? Maybe he's got zero interest in tackling. Who knows? But he'll
from
get
last
the
night,
opportunity.
It seems like he seems like he's into it.
Can he be Equanimeous St. Brown at the least?
Right.
Right?
Right. Can he be a guy who now is so many of the receiver cores in recent years from the Bears have had a bunch of specialists. Now you got real pass catchers. You got real versatile playmakers outside. You're not going to need as many specialists, but it'll be nice to have an EQ-type guy. Equanimeous St. Brown, the thing he was best at, the thing the Bears utilized him at a high level, was to say, when that guy's out there, everybody knows he's not going to do anything but block, and they still can't get around him. Let's throw the bubble screen to his side. He's just going to mow people over. Can Colin Johnson be that? And then occasionally make a catch in a game here and there. That could be a role he carves out now.
When you're trying to handicap what would be who's going to be the backup quarterback, what does last night do for that, if anything?
Are we mushing Tyson Bagent in the face already?
We're doing it.
I think, I suppose in a similar fashion to the Colin Johnson conversation, because Brett Rippin has been on a bunch of rosters. He's a much more experienced pro quarterback than Tyson Bagent.
And he looks like it.
I mean, the mechanics of the position are what you hope for. Now, the physical attributes are going to have some limitations versus, you know, the top players in the sport. But he's out there. I mean, his first series he was out there, I'm looking at him and jotting down a couple of notes. Like, all right, I like the pocket presence. Now, he played a bunch of ball. There are some corollaries between he and Tyson Bagent. Tyson Bagent didn't play college football at nearly as high a level as Brett Rippin did. Brett Rippin played at a Group of Five program, played at Boise State. I was talking about this a little bit last night after the game was over.
His arm is better, though.
Well, sure. Yeah, and that's a part of the reason he was a higher-level recruit. Yeah. He broke all of Kellen Moore's high school records in the state of Washington, and then he followed up to Boise State and broke a bunch of his passing records at Boise State as well. So he's an accomplished quarterback, but there are, for Brett Rippon, some physical limitations that make it a little bit difficult for him to stay in the lineup and sustain a certain level of success on the field. But seeing that last night and looking at the comfort he had out there under some level of duress, not wasn't the duress of having Myles Garrett trying to take your head off or anything, but he climbed the pocket, he kept his eyes down the field, and there's a reason he wasn't here throughout the offseason. He was competing overseas somewhere and doing something, some league somewhere. So, he's played more recently than some of the other guys who were on the field with him. But he got the opportunity, got a bunch of reps, got a bunch of snaps, and frankly, most of the incompletions he had were still balls that hit the hands of the wide receiver. So he was very impressive.
I want to walk through your mind a little bit.
Okay.
I know it's a dangerous place.
It's big. It's cavernous.
I want to know, as you're watching, as you're digesting what the new kickoff rules are, what are the things that you were like, I wonder if this happens. I wonder if this happens. What was happening while you were watching it take place?
I'm wondering how the coverage team, in a similar fashion to what on a standard defensive snap of football, how this new version of the kickoff cover team will try to overload certain areas of the kickoff coverage, because there are certain alignments that you have to be in by rule. And then, of course, you can't move prior to the snap. You got both guys, both sides 5 yards apart, foot's on the line. But then when the returner actually has the football or has an opportunity to field the ball, is there an opportunity, almost like a stunt in the front seven, to overload the kickoff coverage team where you
like
have
a trap play.
Exactly, where you have
you pull somebody around.
Right, and a coffin corner sort of kick where Greg Coffin Corner Coleman, the old Minnesota Vikings punter, but you put the ball towards the corner near the end zone, and you kick it within the green zone between the 0 and the 20, and have your coverage overload in that direction. So once the ball has an opportunity to get fielded, you stunt in that direction, whether it's a slant, whether it's a follow stunt, something to that effect. And then it would be very difficult for the blockers on the kick return unit to try and stick with that, because now they have to fold behind their teammates to try and get an opportunity to actually make a block.
Unless they're fast enough to chase it down from behind.
Well, right, and then you're talking angles.
Right.
Can you actually get there to make that block at the proper angle before the coverage team is going to field it? So that's a part of what, we saw Hightower tinkering around with a few things. You got Torrey Taylor's first snap in the National Football League in the preseason. He's putting his little finger on the football out there so it can be kicked. There was no reason to do that last night necessarily, but all right, let's sort of test this out. But I think the way that kicks are covered within the confines of that 5 yard separation, what kind of almost like defensive snap style stunts can you run to say, we're going to pin this unit back here inside the 20? I think we'll start to see some of that in the regular season.
All right, all the caveats about everything that are understood. Is this offense more normal, for lack of a better term? Is it more of one of where receivers actually go down the field, where running backs get the ball and go forward?
Let's hope so.
Okay.
I think a lot of that, even conceptually, comes down to the execution of the quarterback, the execution of the offensive line. But schematically, yes, we will see bodies that go forward.
That's good. Forward's good.
On offense, that is the preference, to actually move forward. Preferably the people with the football move forward.
Even
or move
better.
Forward with an opportunity to grab the football from the sky when that chance is there. That's one of the things, even with Colin Johnson, the very first time he touched the football, he dropped it on an excellent pass from Brett Rippon. But I like the response from that point forward, though. But now, even with a guy like Colin Johnson, that's where you wonder, what are the limitations within that? Because, if he's running over the middle, he's got a crossing route or a dig route, and there's bodies around him, does he have the concentration to make that grab? First opportunity he had, says no. But outside the numbers, using that 6'6", 225, and going up to get some contested grabs, that seems to be what he specializes in. But within this offense, whether it's off of play action or, just off of some levels concepts, you will need the ability. And this is where Caleb Williams, it's, I guess, one of the underappreciated parts, so many aspects of his game that are adequately appreciated, but he does have the ability to layer the football. He can turn the nose over in a very rapid manner. That's one of those things where, as a quarterback, or you're going to fit it behind the linebacker and in front of the safety. You need to be able to do that at a high level and sometimes in a very rapid manner. Caleb can do that. And so to have a DJ Moore, Keenan Allen is exceptional in that regard. Cole Kmet has gotten better in that regard throughout his career. Where when you have multiple defenders in front and behind you converging at the point of impact and knowing that at the apex, you know, of the ball, of the flight, that you still have to go up and make a physical contested grab, you have some Bears players who've now shown the ability to do that. Caleb Williams will need to be able to fit it in there and know that he's taking a risk. I heard you talking the other day about some of the interceptions in practice and sort of being okay with that. And I agree with that as a point, because he's got to continue to figure out in the NFL, where can he fit that in and which playmaker can he most trust to try and fit that pass in, a very similar type of ball to the one that Brett Rypien threw to Colin Johnson on that first one that was incomplete.
When it comes to Caleb Williams, and now, you know, the Hall of Fame stuff is over for the Bears. They can kind of get back to what would be a new normal preseason in the NFL. What happens now? Like, because there wasn't game action, which made sense. Mm-hmm. What happens now as they get into preseason game two, which is really preseason game one?
It does seem that sort of every phase along the way here, and I'm answering your question. I got this new enormous phone, and I don't know if I muted it adequately. Yes, it is muted. The plan that's been in place for Caleb every step of the way, it does seem like they've procedurally been able to stick with some version, some form of how they want to sort of ramp him up, to have the ability even before the draft to begin to sort of feed him some plays, and then after the draft to make sure that his QB coach is you know, sort of invested in what the Bears' offensive philosophy is and talking the Bears' language with Caleb. And then even here, you get into the preseason phase. Our first game, we got four of them. Don't need to see you play any snaps in game. I like the fact that he was even out there in warmups last night and just going through that, getting some muscle memory where week by week there's going to be less that feels odd to him. There's going to be less that feels
less like, new.
Yeah, yeah. Just sort of, you know, peeling away the newness as you head toward the regular season. So between now and game number two, there's no reason to think he won't play. Who is it? Buffalo they have next week. There's no reason to think he won't play against the Bills. And so between now and then, it's watching the film from last night. Here's some live action. Here's the concepts we've been discussing. Look at Brett Rypien. Execute this and that. He's got a lot of stuff he can learn from Tyson Bagent. Let's see how they ran these concepts. Now that he's on the film room, those can be some of the mental reps that you want him to have. Then you get out there in game action, and there's something to try to execute from there. But I do think he should play. I believe he will play in preseason game number two. And, you know, it's not going to be a half a football or anything, but you want him to get within the offensive system and begin to be able to have Shane Waldron in his ear, be able to call these plays in the huddle. I talked to Ryan Day last week in Indianapolis at Big Ten Football Media Days, and talked to Lincoln Riley as well. You know, looking at the progression from Ryan Day as a coach, from having Justin Fields as a quarterback to C.J. Stroud as a quarterback, Ryan Day adjusted the way that he coached from Justin Fields to C.J. Stroud to have C.J. Stroud more prepared as he entered the National Football League. Ryan Day's told me about that multiple times. Lincoln Riley, the verbiage that's there within his system, there's not a lot of it for a quarterback. We've heard so much about the most difficult aspect of Caleb's transition right now is the verbiage, is the cadence, is the play calling. The more opportunities he gets to do that under not just the physical duress after the ball gets snapped, but the mental duress, the emotional duress in game action and looking in the huddle and knowing a bunch of other grown-ups are counting on you to kind of get this right within all this stuff that you're consuming for the first time and trying to spit back out for the first time. Those are going to be very important opportunities for him to actually do that in game action. And so I think, yes, for him, I wouldn't have minded if he played a bit last night, but I'm not going to hammer anybody for it not happening. But I think over the next few weeks, you want as much of that to become muscle memory as possible in game.
Speaking of looking around the huddle and looking at a bunch of grownups, Keith Byard had brought up something. Kevin Byard, why did I say Keith Byard? He brought up something
about Keith Byers back
right,
in the day.
Yeah, that's why.
Right. Yeah.
He brought up something that Caleb Williams had done at House Hall that he thought showed tremendous leadership, and that was asking guys to, you know, clean up after themselves. Amani Toomer was on earlier today with the Carton Show. And he gave what I thought was a bit of a bizarre response to that.
He's Russell Wilson 2.0.
Uh-oh.
This is not going to go over well.
Uh-oh. How,
if you came in the locker room, I've been in this locker room for 8 years, like you said. And you know, some rookie's going to come in who hasn't played one snap.
Right.
Talking, you know, we're wearing the fingernail polish. You know, now he's going to come in here and tell me, who've been here, who've been through the struggle, that I need to clean up? No, how about rookie? How about you clean up after me?
Right.
How about that? Don't give me this crap. I don't like it at all. I feel like rookies should earn their respect.
Sure.
Just because you got drafted number one doesn't mean nothing to me because I don't even know if you're good.
Oh, blow it out your ass. Come on. Clean up.
I don't have to clean up. It's my room, Dad. Well, I own the house. I don't care. It's still my room. You got to respect my privacy. I don't have to clean up if I don't want to.
So you said he doesn't have like one messy room, like just one room he was allowed as a kid to just kind of get junky in?
There's a lot of stuff in there, including some dog whistle stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you get into the, not only should he not tell me to clean up, but he should be cleaning up after me because you're a vet player. You were a vet. How does this go?
I mean, I'm confident he is not alone in that train of thought. Conceptually feeling like a rookie comes in, they should be seen and not heard. They shouldn't be trying to tell me what to do. And frankly, I don't 100% disagree with the concept of earning your stripes as a rookie. Don't come in thinking you can boss everyone around. But within the context of the Caleb scenario here, that's not how anyone in the Bears locker room, at least, has publicly admitted that they're perceiving anything he's doing about the way he's carried himself so far.
This is not a six-round running
back.
This
is your quarterback.
This is the quarterback of the team.
And he went on even later in that segment to talk about, you know, Eli Manning. Hey, I love you, Eli, but, you know, kind of the quarterbacks being on a pedestal and things like that.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that part of it, you know, Abadi is trying to have a little bit of fun with it, while at the same time, you know, you mentioned some of the dog whistle stuff.
Yeah, the finger. What do you care about his fingernails for?
It shouldn't matter. He shouldn't care about it. It would surprise me, even a Monty Toomer, for everything I know about him, that feels like a big deal to him. He's a bit of a, you know, fashionista type. He kind of went all in with his name being Armani and then the nickname, well-dressed Armani. He kind of leaned into that a little bit throughout his career. So I'd be surprised if he really cares that much about the fingernails, but the concept of Caleb Williams potentially coming in and trying to like run the locker room, we're getting more and more of a sense that that's an outdated view of who Caleb Williams might be. This is a guy in Amani Toomer who's out of town. He's on some, you know, national talk show, just kind of running off at the mouth a little bit. But there's no indications of anything about Caleb that we've seen in Chicago to this point that would indicate he's trying to be some jerk in the Bears locker room. Asking guys to clean up, I would imagine he did it in a remarkably polite way and just pointed out to guys. I mean, his teammate was the one who even went public with it, and Byard didn't have any issue with it at all. So I think we can trust the source.
And he used it as an example of leadership. Positive leadership.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, so there's no reason to think that anyone in the locker room took issue.
Right, that's a veteran all-pro.
Who is currently teammates with Caleb, yes. So, I mean, you know, I don't put a lot of stock into what Amani Toomer has to say about Caleb or what's going on in the Bears locker room. If we start to see something that feels like it's a fracture or a fissure or anything like that, then I think it's worth paying attention to. But at the moment, everybody in the Bears locker room seems to be rooting for Caleb to succeed and to, you know, sort of, you know, be a part of this Bears community. All the guys in the locker room are rooting in the same way for Caleb. DJ Moore has even talked about as much essentially this week. Yes, Justin Fields is his guy, will always be, but this is his current quarterback. He's going to do it. He was out there warming up with Caleb on the field last night. DJ Moore doesn't need to warm up before the Hall of Fame game, but he's just out there supporting Caleb while that's happening. So, I mean, he at the moment seems to have the full support of everybody in the locker room, despite the fingernails being painted.
Speaking of DJ Moore, he gets his contract extension, the largest contract extension in Bears history. They didn't have to do this. Why did they do it?
It's another really good example from Ryan Poles of taking care of guys who are doing it the way they want it done. Now, I don't think he's trying to send the message that every personality in the locker room needs to be exactly the same, that everyone needs to be kind of quote-unquote choir boy type. But, you know, Cole Kmet has gotten taken care of. Now DJ Moore has gotten taken care of. These are not only high-level football players, but high-level people, high-level representatives of the locker room. And they've been exceptional in the midst of Bears struggles in their time in Chicago also, and the Bears have been willing to take care of them in that regard. Sure, Jalen Johnson, there was some back and forth with that before that contract got done, but Jalen earned his money. He got paid his money as well. And even the structure of some of these deals that in some ways could be viewed as team friendly, like getting DJ Moore done now as opposed to a year or two from now.
Yes.
It saves the Bears some money. Getting Jalen Johnson done with a lot of guaranteed money, but then getting him back to the market sooner, it's beneficial to Jalen Johnson. The annual salary didn't reset the market, but the guaranteed percentage of his contract reset the market. So there's a lot of creativity and nuance to me to the way that Ryan Poles is not only sort of leading the team, but handling the contracts with players as well. I feel like DJ Moore is just kind of the latest example of that, of not just saying, like, here's your slot, here's your money, we don't think it's time yet, take it or leave it, but finding a lane that has really suited both sides in several different examples here that I find pretty impressive.